Okay, well, hi everybody, and welcome to this edition of the ASI Cast. The subject for today really is based around advertisers working out what works for them and what does not work for them, and the role that audience measurement and the data produced by audience measurement can play in improving that system and helping us all to get better at our jobs, basically. So I'm delighted to say that I'm joined today by David Beaton. David is co-founder of a business called Navigation, based in Toronto, Canada. Navigation's been around for over 20 years. So maybe we could start, David, with you explaining a little bit about what you do, who you do it for, and what benefits you bring to your clients.
Sure. Thanks, Brian. It's good to be here. So Navigation is designed to build custom advanced analytics for marketers to help measure and optimize marketing activity. We work generally with Fortune 1000 companies. And I would say most of our work has been in areas where clients are relatively data rich, things like telecoms, banks, retailers, et cetera. But these days, almost everybody has more data than they realize. So it's quite a broad range of marketers that we work with. One thing that we focus on that I think is a high value add is our omni-channel measurement. While we will work with clients on things like CRM, and we will work with clients on things like single channel management, it's how all the channels come together to create a business effect where I think our most valuable work is done.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, media spend or advertising spend or whatever description is typically assessed in something to do with audiences, be that audience, the number reached, or the number of ratings bought, or the cost per thousand achieved, or whatever it is. And of course, really what we're trying to do is achieve business success for our clients. And so these things are used as a kind of proxy for for business success. What we have a perfectly good way, of course, of assessing business success through companies like Navigation. Why do you think it is that more clients don't use businesses like yours?
Well, I think it's a good question. It's sort of a two-part question. I would say, let's answer the first part first. Is audience size, is reach a good proxy for business success? I would say, looking back over 20 years, no, it's not a very good proxy for business success. Now, that said, I think the issue comes down to what we pay for the audience and how well that audience gives us business lift. So a low CPM audience is not necessarily a good thing, and a high CPM audience should not necessarily be disqualified. But I do think that there are planners who focus on, I want to get the maximum reach I can for a given budget. And we think that can be very suboptimal. And our work has shown that repeatedly. So why do more clients not use services like this? I think there's two parts to that answer. One's on the supply side, one's on the demand side. On the demand side, I do think there are clients that are still learning about advanced analytics. And they may find it personally a little bit challenging because it's outside of their comfort zone or outside of their expertise. I once had a conversation with a good client of mine, SVP of one of our banks, and we talked at length about the strengths and weaknesses of different approaches to advanced analytics and how they translate into business strategy. And she's quite adept at understanding this, given her background and her capabilities. And at the end of the conversation, I asked her, how many people in our industry would in your role would be able to have this kind of conversation with this kind of confidence? And her estimate was less than 5%. And I think it's gotten better since then, but we're still talking about a majority, at the very least, of senior executives who have to buy advanced analytics, they have to use advanced analytics, for whom there's still a need for development of capabilities in evaluating them and understanding their strengths and weaknesses. That's sort of the demand side of it. On the supply side, data science has been called one of the sexiest jobs of the decade. I don't know about that. But it's certainly been much more popular than it was, say, 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And there's been an influx of talent, but there's still a gap. I've worked with two of our largest business schools here in Toronto on their advisory boards to help them understand how to design these programs so that they create value. So when graduates come out, they can hit the ground running. But you know, even with the increased number of graduates coming out and talent coming over from other parts of the academic world and training and background in these techniques, there's still a gap to how many people could be employed in the industry. So supply side constraint, demand side constraint. That said, I think there'll be a lot more adaptation as people really do realize the quality, you know, the impact that good quality advanced analytics can have on their business.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some people, of course, would criticize this type of work as being sort of rearview mirror stuff and sort of backward looking and not sufficiently predictive in the outcomes that it produces. I'm sure you've heard that criticism once or twice. I mean, is it fair, do you think, or what are you doing to introduce more predictive capabilities into the business?
I smile because I have heard it the odd time. I think it stems from a couple of things. One, I think it's a bit of a misunderstanding of what we're doing with advanced analytics. And secondly, it could be by looking at very poorly designed advanced analytics. But let's deal with the first one. It's true, we use data from the past to build our models. Now, let me be facetious just for a few moments. I would love to have data from the future to build our models. But in doing this for many, many years, I've never found any data from the future. If the ASI can crack that one, then they'll do a tremendous service to the industry. But you know, life is what it is, and we have to use data from the past for this work. Now, when we're using data from the past, it's not that we expect the past to literally repeat itself. We don't. What we're doing is we're looking for cause and effect relationships in that data. And by cause and effect relationships, we are looking for things that we can build confident, reliable decisions around. Now, how do we know that in the data that a relationship that we find is causal as opposed to just correlation? Well, there are a number of criteria that apply, but I think what really holds our feet to the fire is the way we validate these models. In omni-channel measurement models, we use time series techniques, a variation on time series techniques. And so there's three ways actually that we can validate them that we use. One is if say we have 5 years of data in a model, we'll use a holdout time period to apply the model to and see how well the model's predictions fit the actual observations of outcomes. And if we've done a great job of quantifying cause and effect, then we will see a very accurate model. The other way is then to predict the future. So if I have a model today and I'm planning Q1, you know, 2023, I can make predictions about what's going to happen in Q1 2023 as part of the planning process. And then, you know, when we get to end of Q1 2023, we can plug in, you know, the actual, you know, actual outcomes. We also plug in the actual effects. So, you know, if I sat here today and I expected to spend a certain amount of money, and when it actually happened, I spent less money than that. Well, we shouldn't hold the original forecast. We make an adjustment for that, and then we do a comparison. And the third way is a variation on that. We're doing testing. So we may have a holdout market, or we may have other variations on that that allow us to either dial up or dial down advertising and be able to see how well it compares to what the model is predicting. So yes, there are strong predictive elements in it, but the predictive elements have a foundation of the separation of cause and effect from mere correlation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, presumably audience data of whatever description and whatever type and whatever media form we're looking at, I guess, has a very important role to play in this. I mean, it's presumably a very valuable input into the models. I mean, what do you need from the audience measurement community? I mean, what would you know, what could improve, what could make your life easier? I mean, for example, is consistency of data important? I mean, is accuracy important? I mean, what are the most important things for you?
Consistency of data is important, and accuracy is important. But I would say we have learned to live in a world that is not a perfect world. From a data point of view, we would love to have more accurate information about the number of people that are consuming a media in a given period of time. And, you know, things can always evolve to get better at measuring that, and that's a good thing. But we have to get on with the job. And so we do the best we can with the data that's available. There is, though, I think a cascade here, a logic flow. Better measurement should lead to better models. Better models should lead to better decisions, and better decisions should lead to better business outcomes. Now, that journey, in theory, could be measured. So we could take a model and we could have two different currencies in it, and we could see the differences in its accuracy, its differences in its ability to capture business value, And we could say, well, the delta there was the difference in the measurement currencies. Therefore, we can impute a value to those measurement currencies. Now, we've not done that. I think somebody should be tackling that. I think, you know, the ASI could be working with companies to do that. You know, if I think about a project like Origin, it's a very laudable effort. But at some point, an advertiser is going to have to write a check. And they're going to have to justify writing that check based on some kind of process of evaluating the value of that data that they're getting that they're not getting today. And hopefully it will go through the kind of process that I talk about, because I think that kind of rigor is only beneficial to the measurement community, because it is the basis of sustainability. If advertisers see its effect on the business, they're going to be willing and in fact anxious to fund it. So that's a success, that's a virtuous loop that I think would be in everyone's interest to establish.
I mean, I'd like to just end by asking you a little bit about the future, and time for full disclosure, of course. You're sitting in front of a very smart backdrop there with Crater Lake & Co. Written on it. And Crater Lake is a collective, for those that are listening that don't know that. It's a collective of four different disciplines. Brown Jacobs & Associates, is one of those disciplines representing media in that. We also have creative strategists. I mean, we have market research, and indeed we have advanced analytics and modeling through your business. And of course, the idea of Crater Lake is to try to bring all the different disciplines together to work in a kind of seamless fashion to ensure that marketing funds are fully accountable, or the results are fully accountable, I suppose, and that all parties are able to access those results from whatever direction, be it media or creative or, you know, whatever is the most appropriate direction to look at the data from. How do you see the future of this sort of analytics business going? I mean, Crater Lake is based on the idea of bringing more data sets from different sort of directions into modeling. I mean, could you say a little bit about that and how you think that might improve things and how you see that going in the future?
Yeah, we're proud to be a co-founder of Crater Lake. And the idea that the disciplines that you talk about should all sit together when we're starting to craft advanced analytics is a very important one. And I don't think it's widely adapted in the industry. And I think it will be very beneficial. There's a technique that we use at the front end of our projects we call causal mapping. And when we do causal mapping, we're essentially asking clients, well, all right, so we're going to model sales. What do you think drives sales? What suppresses them? And we're looking for a list of causal factors. And then from that list of causal factors, we're mapping data sources into it. So every causal factor has a data source. Now, as we've done that repeatedly over the years, there are questions that come up in these things that, frankly, a model alone is not going to do a great job of answering. And there are questions that come up when we do causal mapping that I think having someone who has had to plan out creative strategy for a major brand at the table is enormously helpful, because they have different answers to those questions, and very valuable ones. Having someone at the table who's got the background of having to plan global media is also very valuable, because they again will ask different questions and very good and relevant questions. So these all lead to better models through the process I described. So I think one thing is we're going to see more holistic models. Are going to be more accurate, they're going to be more reliable, they're going to have more business value. That's one area. Another area, I think, is in automated tools. One of the most valuable pieces of software we have that we've built is actually not what we use to build models with. It's what we call a simulator. And you know, we need help giving it a jazzy name, but you know, we just call it a simulator. It's software designed to take complex models and help extract the narrative. Essentially, more specifically, what it does is it isolates factors, holds other factors constant, allows you to vary, say, spending against those factors and see the effects. So the other thing it does is, of course, it optimizes. So it allows you to plug in a budget, run optimization, and have an answer to what's the most optimal allocation of a budget to, you know, the different creatives, to channels, to markets, and over time, and what business effect will that create, say, compared to another plan, and then, you know, variations on that theme. So that's a tool that we've built, we use, and then we provide, you know, advisory services based on it. But increasingly, I think clients are going to want to have that tool themselves. They're going to want to be on their own optimization, their own simulation. And, you know, we're figuring out now the process to be able to do that, because the software is well designed for people who've got a deep quantitative background. It's not well designed for people who don't. So we have some design issues to overcome, but we think we've got a handle on that. So I think more powerful decision support tools in the hands of clients is one of the areas where we're going. And I think in general, advanced analytics are going to be something that's more embedded in buying processes. You know, one thing that Google has taught the marketing community is if you embed really smart algorithms behind an easy to use interface, you get some pretty powerful effects. That's essentially what Google search is. And you know, if you use some of their tools for targeting advertising. Now, I have other issues with some of the way that targeting runs into bots, but that's another conversation for another time. But you know, you can see the same thing happening in other channels. You know, one of the issues that or trends that I find very interesting right now is as we see the slow death of cookies, very slow, very, very slow death of cookies, you know, something's going to replace them. And increasingly, first party data is extremely important to clients. It's fits directly into the idea of how we measure audiences because it's direct observation at scale. And one of the biggest, you know, holders of that data are retailers. So you have retailers who are sitting on tremendously detailed stacks of data about consumer behavior and then can give powerful feedback to brands. They're just starting to scratch the surface about how to use that to target ads and to measure ads, whether the ads are carried by the retailer through their own in-house media or they're, you know, in the broader media community. That's going to be a source of enormous innovation and opportunity in the coming, you know, next few years. I think you're going to see incredible work in that area. So a lot of moving parts. One behind the scenes too is because one of our co-founders is heads the operations research area at the University of Toronto Business School. And so there's a lot of work being done in the academic space about advanced analytics itself. How do you better model? How do you better optimize? You know, what are tools that the community analytics, the practitioner community can better use? There's a lot of that research is coming out that is constantly helping advance the science and the art of this work. But it's a bit behind the scenes. It's something that clients generally don't see, but they see the effect of in better work.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me also that, you know, it's also about sort of breaking down barriers, this, isn't it, too? I mean, it's always struck me as kind of rather peculiar. You've got consumer market research happening in one part of the forest, as it were, and then you've got analytics happening in another part of the forest. And these two things are sort of not joined up. And yet, presumably, the way consumers think about things or talk about things, I imagine, must have an effect on the ultimate result. And that needs to be reflected in the model somewhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, and in different ways. I'm always, and I think we've evolved this way because it generally is the way clients buy our services. You know, clients tend to buy market research services from the market research community, and they tend to buy advanced analytics. You know, a different group within the client side will buy advanced analytics from the advanced analytics community. And when you look at the inside the client's organization, there are different silos using different tools, and there's a need to bring that together. And you know, right now, all of that cascade of information, where does it come together? It comes together on the desk of the CMO, but it comes together in bits and pieces that they've got to try to stitch together into a cohesive narrative. You know, we've coined the term clear performance narrative as a way to try to get our arms around this issue. So integration is going to be an important thing in a world that is not well integrated now. And, you know, the benefits of it are become obvious as you work your way through it.
Great. Well, that seems like a very sensible place, an appropriate place to stop. So, David, thank you very much indeed for joining us for this edition of the ASI Cast.
My pleasure. Thank you.